This is the Education Gadfly Show.
And I'm all about an algorithm that's congruent.
Charter school.
Lose.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, American Education's own Special Forces, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, babe?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I like that one.
Yeah.
Especially, this is a good week to be up on the Special Forces.
I know. People seem to be in good moods this week, huh? Mm-hmm. Wait, I think John Stewart said, I hope I never feel this good about somebody else's death again.
I saw him at the, I saw the morning rerun of The Daily Show. He was in good form.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk a little bit about Mr. Bin Laden, among other things. But yeah, this is kind of an exciting thing. You know, so this, President Obama got a bump, 10% increase in his approval rating. You expect that to stick around at all?
That'll last about a month or two.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what he does with it.
Yeah. I mean, is that it? I mean, is that you assume that then that's political capital that he could spend on something else?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? I mean, because this is right. This is what, Bush 43 did with his post 9/11 bump.
Yeah. So you're saying
he gave us NCLBs,
that's right,
among other things.
So you're saying that ESEA will be reauthorized in the next month because of the Bin Laden bump.
I think Obama may choose to use his capital elsewhere.
Okay, let's get started. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear Amber's Research Minute. Chris's What's Up With That. Daniela, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Okay, still on the Bin Laden kick. His death arguably marks a turning point in post 9/11 America. What should schools be teaching about it?
That we're glad he's dead.
So, Rick, you... You were a high school social studies teacher, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if you were still in the classroom today, or let's say the other day when this news broke, what would you have taught about it? How would you have handled it?
I would have said, write a poem. Write a haiku about how excited you are that the SOB is dead. Really dead. And you can draw a picture of what he looks like with his corpse rotting in the ocean if you're so inclined.
Wow. We're in a punchy mood today, guys.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
And, Checker in a blog post the other day, pointing out some reports we did back after 9/11 about how schools could teach about all this stuff, said that he's wishing for Osama bin Laden's eternal damnation. Anyways, we got nothing on this one. We will do a different topic.
I will say it's interesting because it was during the first Gulf War when I was teaching in Baton Rouge. That I actually went into the Navy recruiter's office to explore the possibility of becoming a SEAL.
Wow.
So that was like 20 years ago, actually this spring.
So my little joke about Special Forces is not such a joke.
Such a joke because there's no way in hell I would have ever made it through, either physically or mentally. I mean, those guys are tough.
Did the recruiter make that clear to you?
No, they were interested. They don't get a whole lot of guys, with Harvard degrees who can bench 300 who are interested. But those guys are, I remember we would sit down and we did about 2 hours with them walking me through just exactly what, SEAL qualifying school entails or whatever they call it. I mean, these guys were doing 13, 7-minute miles in hiking gear on the beach. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah. Wow. I like how you got it in there that you can bench 300 pounds.
No, once upon a time.
All right. Very nicely. Do you think you could bench me, Rick, still?
Nowadays? I was actually just thinking. I think that would be an interesting for charity event.
All right. After the show, we'll just give it a try.
We'll just clear off the desk.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
We'll just see what happens.
Okay, I'm pretty sure I can bench Amber.
Okay, but we're not allowing you to do that.
Right, right.
We've talked about this, Rick.
This whole sexual harassment thing.
Yes. We've had a couple conversations with Rick about hostile work environments. Okay, topic number two.
Question number two. Newsweek isn't too keen on education philanthropy, arguing that it basically amounts to heaps of wasted cash. What is the role of foundations in education reform?
So what did you think of this Newsweek article, Rick?
I was not impressed.
Yeah, how come?
Did that actually run in the magazine, or was that just like an online thing?
I can't tell yet. I don't know. Does anybody actually read the magazine? Do they publish a magazine anymore?
They do. No one reads it anymore.
Okay.
It was strange that, the whole premise seemed to be that the piece started by bragging about the enormous amount of research they had done somehow to identify some cities where a lot of philanthropy was given, and then to find out the test scores hadn't gone up much more rapidly or any more rapidly than other parts of those states. And then it launched into a whole long travail on all the evil or difficulties of various big dollar fund. I don't know.
Rick, it sounds to me like you are just flacking for your funders. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, not so much. That's just, I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff you can learn. I mean, right, there it was really interesting that in pivoting away from small schools, the Gates Foundation went from taking no interest in policy to trying to play an enormous role in shaping education policy. I mean, that's a hugely interesting shift.
Yeah, and that's something that you basically argued for in your book about education philanthropy a few years ago, where the Gates Foundation, you know, executives were there listening, saying, look, if you're going to, you know, this is much more high leverage way to use your money than trying to do these little programs all over the country.
And if you're going to do that stuff, you know, I mean, like or don't like the Common Core, and I'm agnostic, you don't expect that effort to change test scores this year in this or that city or state. It's a question of, can you change the system writ large?
But is there any way to ever measure the impact of philanthropy? I mean, because it's easy. I mean, you start making this case and you say, well, it sounds like what people say about why we can't hold schools accountable or teachers accountable is because there's measurement problems. How do you untangle everything? It's the same problem, right?
Sure there is. I mean, no, these are the same challenges. And I think the answers are actually the same, is that, sure, philanthropies can gauge whether or not their investments are effective. But there's no simple shortcut, kind of simple number that you ought to use. Just like I think it's a problem to try to come up with a number which will tell you if somebody's a good teacher, try to look at a test score or a movement in a graduation rate to decide whether a couple hundred million in a complicated foundation strategy made sense. It's just, you know, it's probably not the right way to frame the question. If the piece had been, what are three or four things these guys got wrong and three or four things they've learned in the process, it could have been a hell of a lot more interesting piece.
Mm-hmm. All right, great. Thanks. You know, Rick, I like what you said about, you know, not boiling it down to one number. So, for example, it wouldn't be appropriate to boil everything about Rick Hess down to the number 300, as in the number of pounds you used to be able to bench press.
Or the number of highly cited scholarly articles he has published. No.
Oh, right, because you don't pay attention to that number either.
Because he has brains and bronze, Mike.
Hey, did I mention that my clout score has gone up rapidly on Twitter?
You did. So tell us. So what is exactly a clout score?
Well, it just measures your influence online. It, you know, if more people click on your tweets or retweet them or respond, your number goes up. And yeah, my number's rising.
So if you were hanging out in a bar with some of the Special Forces dudes involved in the Osama takedown.
Right.
And you mentioned that you had been driving up your tweet scores by encouraging retweeting, by getting in Twitter fights. What do you think the reaction would be?
Yeah, that's why I don't hang out in bars. Okay, topic number three.
In light of Teacher Appreciation Week, Arne Duncan issued an open letter to the American teacher. What are the takeaways? Why do we care?
Rick, I bet you loved this letter.
Oh, man, this thing made me nauseous. I love you so much. Kisses, respect, and kisses.
So, you know, there's been a lot of reaction to the letter from teachers, basically saying, up yours, Arne Duncan. You know,
doesn't that suck? That's like when you crawl after your ex-girlfriend and all you're doing is saying, yes, you cheated on me, but I love you anyway. Oh, sure, you beat me, but I love you. And they still won't even give you the time of day. That's just harsh.
Wow. Yes, it is like that. I mean, it was kind of pathetic. And the question is, for our friends over there in the Department of Education, in the press office, we know and like many of them, what were they thinking? That this would somehow make a difference? Say, well, I'm going to explain one more time why we want to evaluate teachers using value-added data and reiterate that we really do like you and respect you and appreciate you.
It's just harsh. Man, when you sit here and fawn, you know what it is? It's like you go up to your grandma and you're like, Grandma, I love you. And she still just hits you in the stomach and says, go away, you bother me. That's just harsh.
Does that happen to you, Rick?
Yeah, these stories are oddly specific.
It happened to a friend of mine, man. I'm just saying. If you're going
to
go.
I think you need somebody to talk to.
I'm just saying, if you're going to go all this whole out, we love you, we suck up the teacher thing, and then they still dump on you, that's brutal.
That's brutal. But look, we would agree, though, that there, well, maybe we don't know. Do we know? Do we think there's an actual problem out there that teachers feel demoralized, that they feel beaten upon, and that there's something that Arne Duncan or reformers or somebody could do to lift their spirits?
I will say I did suggest to the department after reading Duncan's letter that, you know, there's other people in school districts who also are shouldering this burden. One, I thought, who often don't get a lot of love are the communications professionals.
Absolutely.
So I did suggest that they maybe have a I think you mentioned there's a Communication Professionals Week, or there should be. And I think Duncan should write a letter to the communications professionals. And I dreamed up a slogan for them.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Education communications. It's PR-tastic.
Nice.
Great. Wow.
Hey, how is it decided?
You guys were not impressed. Neither were they, actually. I will say that.
I do want to know, how is it decided whether as a group you get a day or a week or a whole month?
Or nothing.
Or nothing. Right. I mean, us Italians, we get Columbus Day. That's it. That's all we got.
Yeah, but that's a federal holiday.
Well, that's pretty sweet.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, you're right. All right. So, but the teachers, they get Teacher Appreciation Day and Teacher Appreciation Week. I don't know. Are they asking for too much?
But there's no federal holiday involved.
Well, I know. That's true. And they do have to share it with National Charter Schools Week, which is too bad. Okay, that's all the time we got for Barn the Gadfly. Rick, I feel like you bring out the worst in me sometimes.
Mm.
I love it.
Hey, if it's National Charter Schools Week, remember a couple of years back, we used to sing the National Charter School Blues.
We did. That's right. Do you remember how it went?
No, but I bet if we could hum a few bars, we'd get it going. National Charter Schools Week. It is pretty sweet. I'm all about a charter school student, and I'm all about an algorithm that's congruent.
Charter School
Blues.
Coming up next, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So Rick and I have been in rare form. Listeners may not know that because by the time they listen, it's possible that producer Joe has cut out all of the funny stuff we've said today.
Butchery.
Yeah. And I'm particularly interested to see if our rendition of the Charter School Blues makes it into the cut. If not, listeners, you want to hear it, you can just call Rick on his cell phone. Okay.
There you go.
Amber, what you got for us today?
I have got a new Pew Center report. It is not going to be good news, but here we go. Examine state of teacher pension plan. I'm sorry, state pension plans in the U.S. uses financial reports produced by each state. Uses each state's actuarial. There we go. Estimates. Pew estimated pension liabilities for each state using the state's own estimates and assume liabilities will come due in even increments over the next 50 years. They found that the gap between the promises states made for employee retirement benefits and the money they set aside to pay for them grew to at least $1.26 trillion in 2009, which was a 26% increase in 1 year. State pension plans in particular had about a $660 billion gap. In all, state pension plans were slightly less than 78% funded, declining 6 percentage points from the 2008 level of 84%. Side note, most experts, including Warren Buffett, apparently, advise states that they need to have at least 80% funded. New York, curiously enough, led the way with a funding level of 101%. Pew attributes this to the state's fiscal discipline. They said when bad times hit, they were protected because they slightly overfunded during the boom. New Jersey, on the other hand, stopped making payments, and now they're in the red, obviously. Retiree health benefits were in especially poor shape. This was really intriguing to me. We hear this a lot. $31 billion to pay for $65 billion in liabilities, which is slightly less than 5% of the total cost. 19 states have set aside zero to fund retiree health care. They operate on a pay-as-you-go basis. Which is, you know, obviously not going to be good if these costs don't get managed. Arizona and Oregon stand out as having more than half of their retiree health liability funded, so I have no clue why. Bleak report. Others say that the state's assumptions that were used in the report are even optimistic, so the numbers could be even worse. So there you have it.
So, Amber, what should we take from this?
I think that we need to have some pension reform.
You know, what's interesting, you've got places like Illinois where the way that they've dealt with pension reform is by slashing benefits for new workers, right? Mm-hmm. But they're a state where the teachers don't get Social Security. Mm-hmm. And so there's some questions about whether, you know, you go to teach in Illinois under this plan, you might get less during retirement than you would if you taught, you know, worked in another job got your Social Security. Yep. I mean, it's so we're just like, okay, we're going to just keep paying these huge benefits for the baby boomers and screw everybody else.
That is a takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly right. And you know, some states like New Jersey, and New Jersey's not the only one. There are quite a few that just stop paying, you know, done.
So, do we know any baby boomers that we could have on the show and ask about this?
Hmm.
I think Checker is just a little bit too old to be.
So what was it? What's the 46?
Yeah, 46 to 64, I think.
Mm. So 46
my mom
means
come in.
Okay, let's do that, Amber. We're going to ask her, why are you stealing our money?
Hold on. What's, hold on. So Checker's, because doesn't Checker, was he 45?
Yeah, maybe, something like that. Just missed it.
Just missed it.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe you go out on the street, recruit a couple baby boomers.
Yeah, I like that. So Rick, what's your take on this pension stuff? I mean, are we right to be worried about this?
Yes.
How come?
Because there's a problem.
He'd rather just talk Amber's smack today and not talk real.
Amber just catched it, man. Nothing here is news.
Yeah.
But it's like dealing with the federal deficit. Everybody's, if we're dealing with it in principle, but everybody wants to scream like a banshee if they're going to lose anything that they think they're entitled to, mm-hmm. whether it's Medicare or Social Security.
Right. Bleak. Okay, so what song goes along with this depressing
news? So since we're these pensions and liabilities are free falling, we have a song of the same title by Tom Petty.
Yes.
She's a good girl, loves her mom, loves Jesus in America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses and her boyfriend too. And it's a long day living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy 'cause I don't even miss her. I'm a bad breaking her heart.
I love that song, Rick.
Good tune, baby.
All right, it's time for everybody's second favorite, Chris Irvine's What's Up With That?
I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what's up with that. What's up with that? Yes, sir.
Chris, welcome back to the show.
How's it going, Mike?
Good. What you got for us today?
Yeah, man. What up?
All right. Well, New York City has long been a hotbed for illegal weapon sales. With notorious gang wars between the Bloods and Crips, guns are undoubtedly a frequently trafficked item on the Big Apple's black market. A recent gun bust left cops traveling to PS 107, however, an elementary school in the Queensboro. Upon arrival, police were shocked to discover that on the previous day, an 8-year-old boy had paid $3 to a fellow third grader for a 9mm semi-automatic handgun. An administrator called 911 after it was brought to him by the mother of the boy who bought it, who showed it to her thinking it was a toy. The gun, whose serial number was predictably scratched off, was loaded from the moment the first boy brought it to the school. While the 54-year-old father of the boy, admitting to buying the gun a decade ago for protection, faces two charges, his 8-year-old son also faces juvenile charges. What's up with that? I wasn't aware that having bad parents is a crime in New York. I mean, it's not like he brought the thing in to use. The safety was on. Come on, folks. This little guy was just trying to make some ends. Not only should we be rewarding this kid for his entrepreneurship, but also for leaving the automatic weapons at home. Or on the other hand, maybe he had safety in mind the whole time and just wanted to get the gun out of his house. But in all seriousness, I hope this young man learns from his time dealing with the juvie court, and that it isn't just a starting point to a further life of crime.
A little equivocal there, Chris. Like, you're not quite sure what to make of this.
Yeah. You know, I was feeling a little satirical when I wrote this one, but...
So the question is, did the boy think... the boy that sold it, did he think it was a toy? Because if he thought it was a real gun, what was he doing selling it for $3? I mean, that kid doesn't need to go to juvie. Like, he needs to go to, you know, an economics class. Or maybe just math class. Rick, you taught in Louisiana, kind of a crazy place. Were kids allowed to bring guns to school in Louisiana?
No.
No. No. Well, that's good. How about teachers? Were you allowed to pack it?
I don't believe. I don't believe.
If you're in Texas, right, you're allowed to carry it, right?
I've never been a gun guy.
No.
Yeah, that's just...
Interesting.
But the interesting thing, like the kid, I mean, say the dad's actually got the gun in a gun cabinet.
Right.
Like you're supposed to. But the kid... you know, has seen him with a combination or actually knows where the key's kept, too. Then you got this weird situation that maybe a parent's being responsible.
Yeah.
It's just tough stuff.
Hmm. These dilemmas you bring us. Instead of what's up with that, we should call it something like Chris's Moral Dilemmas.
We could have a rotating segment.
All right, well, think about it. Okay, that's all the time we got for today. I hope you at least enjoyed the entertaining factor. Rick, until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.